Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Bless Your Boys podcast. BlessYourBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I'm the managing editor of BlessYourBoys.com. And I know we've been away for a little bit, so we decided to come back with a question and answer podcast. We got a lot of responses from you guys on the site and as well on social media. I'm going to fly solo on this one. I should have my partner, Ashley McLennan, back next time. But you are going to have to listen to my voice for possibly an hour straight. I apologize for that, but that's just the way it is. So we'll kind of tackle a bunch of questions. A lot of them kind of overlapped. There was a lot of big sort of general, you know, overarching themes involved in most of the questions. And so I'm going to kind of break this down into a couple different sections. I'm going to start out talking about the hiring of Ryan Garko as the Tigers' new vice president of player development. We'll discuss that a little bit. I've got a bunch of questions about the Arizona Fall League and who might show up there for the Tigers. So we'll do those two in concert. And then the next kind of general question is about this season and how much of a luck factor basically the Tigers had this year. How much regression we should expect from different players next year and the team overall. So we'll tackle that. And then we get into, you know, the obvious questions, which are what should the Tigers do this offseason? And, you know, there's questions about how they should address the shortstop position, whether or not just in general this is the right time for them to start spending. Some of the other needs and position groups, catcher, who's going to be in the outfield next year. So we'll wrap things up with that. First of all, yeah, let's talk about Ryan Garko. A lot of times, these positions, when they're filled, it's very hard to know, you know, what to expect. You know, a lot of people want to know, is this a good hire? Is this a bad hire? You know, there's just no way to know. It's going to probably take several years to see how Garko does here. I think, you know, the things that we can take away is that he, you know, kind of has that Stanford and LA Dodgers connection to A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch started off, you know, in player development in the Dodgers front office when his playing days were over as a catcher. Ryan Garko, I believe, was a catcher when he was at Stanford, although he profiled more like a mashing first baseman in the minor leagues, and that was kind of who he was as a player with the Cleveland Indians in particular. Just never hit enough. You know, he's one of those guys who didn't really have the defensive skills to provide any value. Wasn't a great contact hitter, solid though, and needed to be a guy who hits 30 home runs a year because he didn't have speed. Wasn't going to post huge walk rates or anything like that, huge on base percentages. So that's kind of the player he was. But then you have, you know, a guy who coached a little bit at Stanford, worked in the Dodgers organization under Gabe Kapler. Gabe Kapler has, you know, kind of become one of the industry standards as far as like modernizing your player development system. He was one of the big innovators in terms of, you know, pushing his team to provide better nutrition to the players, especially, you know, the minor league players who aren't making very much money, to make sure that those guys were all eating healthy. He's had interest in, you know, sleep studies and making sure, you know, guys are rested, both in terms of like getting enough sleep, but also in terms of workload in your training or, you know, during the season, in terms of how much wear and tear is going on with people's bodies. Like, he's one of the guys who, you know, was, you know, among the first, at least, to, you know, reach out to the medical community and to, you know, kind of start researching those aspects and trying to, you know, develop a more holistic approach for his, for all the minor leaguers in the Dodgers system. You know, and that goes to, obviously, you know, strength and conditioning, stretching, flexibility, and the, you know, the mental side of the game, and as well, you know, mental health in general. These are some of those topics Garko himself has hit on in the past, based on some of the little bits of interviewing of him that I've seen. Cody Stavenhagen, who's been a guest on the show a number of times, the Athletic Detroit's beat writer for the Tigers, had a nice piece up on him where he kind of touched on some of those subjects. And that's, you know, that's the way the sport is trending. You know, Garko is obviously well versed in analytics and can put all that stuff to use as well. But you know, he's not just like a guy who's going to come in there and crunch numbers and all that. You know, they're taking a very detailed approach to, you know, every aspect of their players, you know, preparation, you know, from the rookie ball levels all the way up to, through the major leagues. And, you know, that's basically what we wanted. It's just hard to know, you know, based on his experience and qualifications, you know, how well he'll do working in a front office environment. You know, is he going to be a guy who, you know, can manage all the personalities and sort of all the administrative parts of that job that, that come along with it? You know, as far as, you know, coaching players, hiring good coaches, he should be well connected to do all that stuff. Another thing that's interesting about him, you know, apart from the, you know, the ties to Hinch and Lombard, Fetter, you know, all those guys came through the Dodgers player development system, was where they sort of cut their teeth once their playing days respectively ended. Yeah, so one of the, you know, the other elements to that is, you know, the college pathway. You know, we've seen more and more the advanced teams are more willing to turn to college coaching and bring those guys into the major leagues than has ever been the case before. You know, like 10, 15 years, those two worlds were a little bit more separate. But because, you know, the major league teams are moving in these directions, they're plucking more college coaches because college coaches have kind of always had to do all these different things. You know, you've got to manage your player's temperament, you know, their mental health, their, you know, making sure they're eating well, that they're, you know, that you have a relationship with them. I mean, obviously there's the recruiting part of it, which helps in terms of, you know, identifying guys who have the ability to communicate with players and inspire them and lead them. A lot of that stuff was developed, you know, or at least conceptualized, you know, via college coaching. And that's also true of a lot of the advances we've seen in coaching of pitchers, for example. You know, at the major league level, you're trying to find the best talent available. When you're a college head coach, you recruit the best you can, but then you've got to make those guys better. That's really your only, you know, your only pathway to improving. You can't make mid-season trades. So, you know, in a lot of ways, the college side of things got ahead of the pros. Some of the best, you know, college programs out there had better pitch development and pitch design labs built than any major league team did, you know, going back even like 4 or 5 years. And, you know, there's a lot of different examples, but we could also point to Dan Hubbs, who the Tigers plucked at the end of 2019, who was UCLA's head coach for several years, had a good track record for getting the most out of, you know, the pitchers that he was able to recruit. And, you know, that led him to a job as the Tigers director of, what do they call him? The director of pitching philosophies and pitch design, I believe. I don't know. It's kind of a complicated title. But, so, you know, this all kind of fits as far as that goes. You know, you've got a guy who, in Garko, came up through the Gabe Kapler sort of lineage of player development personnel and has those ties to Hinch, Fetter and George Lombard as well, the Tigers bench coach. And so all I can really say is that I have to feel like they approved of him. You know, like, you know, maybe they didn't recommend him, or that maybe they weren't as involved in like picking the next guy. And maybe that came down mostly to, you know, the Tigers' two new vice presidents, Sam Menzin and Jay Sartori, and Al Avila himself. But I have to think that, you know, he was a candidate that all those three guys would have approved of for him to get the job. You know, the Tigers didn't wait till the end of the season to start interviewing a ton of different people. They seem, you know, to have probably landed on him pretty early on and just went and got their guy. So we'll see how he does. It's really, you know, it's really too early to say anything about that. The Tigers are, you know, well on their way to becoming a more innovative team. You know, they're certainly, you know, in the maybe just below the top tier as far as, you know, having the technology on hand, having the analysts. You know, they're developing at least a performance science department via Dr. Georgia Giblin, who they hired at the end of 2019. And so they've got that performance science department. That's another aspect that Garko can tap into. I think it was in Stavenhagen's piece too, where he mentioned that they're starting to pair guys up in small groups for kind of high intensity training sessions in certain elements, whether it's, you know, swing changes or with the pitchers and pitch design sessions. They're starting to do those in little groups where they can, you know, kind of support each other, and you sort of have a couple of your teammates with you. You're all working on different things and can provide feedback to each other if you all know what the other ones are working on. So that, you know, and that's not something I've really heard of a whole lot before, where, you know, it wasn't just like everyone's down in Lakeland, you know, going through instructs and doing their thing, but they're actually picking specific players that they want to work on something specific, and putting those guys together with coaches, you know, to help facilitate that growth. And, you know, that's another aspect that I would imagine, you know, someone like Garko would probably, you know, continue and develop further, is, you know, getting those guys that specific instruction, you know, that's tailored to them as much as possible. And even in the off season, well away from where the normal camps are. So, you know, that was an interesting note to read as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like there, but yeah, we're just going to have to kind of see how that plays out. I was not a fan of Dave Littlefield running the player development program as long as he has. Tigers haven't really developed many guys until, you know, Kreidler broke out this year. That's one of their best stories. You know, Tarik Skubal broke out pretty quickly as well as a ninth round pick, but the Tigers didn't really seem to have that much to do with that. That was just, you know, that was a good pick. That was good drafting. But a lot of the refinement that's gone on with Tarik Skubal came, you know, once he got to the major league level, and especially this year under Chris Fetter and Juan Nieves as his pitching coaches. So, you know, there just isn't a whole lot of history. I mean, you look at all these college hitters the Tigers have taken, you know, in the second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, through the 10th and 15th rounds, and they've really rarely gotten much out of that. You know, there are guys who've shown improvement, like, you know, Jacob Robson's one, a guy that, you know, wasn't really projected to be any kind of a legit, you know, 45, you know, future value type prospect, was much more of like a project type, but he did improve along the way. You know, there's some guys like that, like Eric De La Rosa this year, outfielder we drafted several years ago, who was just like a great athlete who didn't really have much in the way of like refined baseball skills. You know, his first year or two in the organization, he didn't improve much. He was still swinging and missing a lot. But this is a guy with speed and really good raw power, can play center field. And, you know, we saw him break out with the bat this year as well. It's not to the point where, you know, he's necessarily going to come out and torch double A and get to the league, you know, in any time soon. He may never be a guy who quite puts it together enough to be a really good prospect. But, you know, he's crept into that fringe territory where before he was just sort of, you know, oh yeah, that was a good athlete, you know, like Jose King or something, you know, who just didn't really have the baseball skills to really be a threat. So, you know, there've been a couple signs I thought this year, but you know, that's after they kind of moved Dave Littlefield out of that position and hired Kenny Graham as the director of player development. Now, whether or not he'll stay on in that role under Garko, I don't really know. But we did see at least, you know, some signs of improvement this year. It's just difficult to quantify this year as well because, well, it's always difficult to quantify. It's difficult to qualify because, you know, the 2020 season getting canceled for all the minor leaguers just made it really hard to, you know, to kind of evaluate. Like, it made sense that a lot of guys would come back and, you know, have changed a bunch in the year, you know, that we didn't see them. And it's hard to know how much of that, you know, how much improvement this year is just that time off and not having seen these guys that much. So it seems like some of them are taking leaps, or, you know, whether or not, you know, that improvement really did just take place this year based on, you know, the coaching that they got in Lakeland and with their minor league affiliate. So, you know, that can be hard to judge, but it overall, it feels like the system is moving in the right direction, if slowly. The drafting has been reasonably good. They've had a couple drafts that we were pretty happy with recently. You know, not worrying so much about the first rounder or the comp round or the second round pick, but finding guys further down who other teams would actually have wanted as well, rather than sort of what used to happen, whereas the Tigers would often seem to just pick guys out of a hat, based on their college numbers or something. And, guys that didn't even show up on Baseball America's top 500, the Tigers would be taking them, in the fourth or fifth round. Sometimes those things happened and it never worked out. So overall, I feel better. I don't think the player development system could have really gotten worse. And I think this is a pretty good move to make it substantially better. So overall, I'm happy for the time being, and we'll just see how that plays out. Now, one of the first decisions Garko is going to be involved with is who to send to the Arizona Fall League. We had a couple questions about the Arizona Fall League and who might be on the roster there. The Fall League kicks off on October 13th, I believe. And, typically the guys that you send to the Arizona Fall League are guys who, maybe were injured during the year, didn't get as many reps as you would want. That could be starting pitcher like Logan Shore, who is maybe a little bit old for the type of guy who usually gets sent to the Arizona Fall League, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him there, because finding any pitchers who still have, innings in their arm that their team is willing to spend this year isn't going to be that easy. So, you could see Logan Shore there. Dylan Dingler didn't miss a lot of time, but he's a guy who's, learning the most intensive position on the field as a catcher. Didn't catch a ton in college, and so there's a lot of development to do with him as well. If he's not too physically burnt by the season, it was kind of a tale of two halves for him, where he started off for 2 months and just raked for West Michigan, did well when he got to Erie for a little bit, and then really, really hit a wall offensively and struggled for, a good month and a half, fractured his finger, missed a few weeks, and couldn't really get on track when he got back over the last few weeks. So, you could see someone like him as well. Sometimes it's guys who are, older prospects who are kind of getting near that Rule 5 decision point, like Cody Clemens is a good example. Had a pretty good year this year, but, doesn't really have much of a pathway to playing time with the Tigers anymore, now that we're not, in that rebuilding phase where you could pretty much play anybody you wanted because you didn't have any, full-time players who were, legit, regular, everyday guys. We're pretty much out of that phase now. So someone like Cody Clemens, maybe you would take him there, in the sense that he would showcase himself a little bit for possible trades. You could put Daz Cameron in that spot as well, just because, he was banged up much of the year, never really got a chance to get into much of a groove. Itzhak Paredes has, been at the major league level enough over the past 2 years that I'm not sure, that would really be viable anymore to send him to the Arizona Fall League. But he's another one who, you might want to continue working and get him in front of some other teams who might say to themselves, we think we can get more out of that guy than the Tigers did. He's still only, 22, 23 years old. He's got plate discipline. We think we can work with him. His defensive skills are, reasonably solid, apart from being, slow as molasses. You might showcase a guy like that there. Beyond that, I think of, in terms of pitching, I think of a lot of the young college starters who did well for the Tigers this year, kind of between West Michigan and Erie, like Garrett Hill, Brendan White, who's the other guy I was thinking of? Austin Bergner, Bo Brisky, who, got to Erie and looked okay there. That might be an option. Joey Wentz, I would assume that you would probably shut down because they're going to want to, keep a tight rein on his innings. So I don't necessarily think you're going to see him there. Maybe Reese Olson, probably not, but maybe. And positionally, a guy like De La Rosa makes sense, I think. He's had a good year. He's been kind of in the process of improving. And when a guy is rolling and getting better, you kind of want to keep that season going. So he might be one to end up there. Ryan Kreidler could kind of fit that profile, but he got to Toledo and has continued to just, to mash pretty well, when he's there. So I'm not really sure that the Tigers, need to see much more out of him or whether there'd be that much value, sending him to the Arizona Fall League. But, those are some ideas. Andre Lipschitz, didn't really break out this year. the way Kreidler did, got to double A, and this has been solid there, but, you know, didn't do a ton of damage. He might be a guy that you could send there. A couple of the college outfielders, you know, I'm thinking of like Andrew Navigado in particular, might be a guy that you would send there. Austin Murr, I think it's a little bit too soon to do that. He might be a good candidate for that next year. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like your rough idea of who you might see there. Bryant Packard might be another one, you know, who really needs to start hitting for more power because his profile is so limited. And, you know, had a decent year with the bat at West Michigan, but, you know, no real signs of major movement after the year off. And, you know, that was kind of a downer a little bit this year, at least for, you know, people who are bigger believers. You know, Packard's got his adherents out there. So, you know, maybe a guy like him you send there as well, for some specific work on some things. Get him in that that dry desert air and see if he can learn to mash some more taters, something along those lines. Yeah. And then, okay, that kind of covers the development and minor league portion of events. I'll do a whole podcast on the farm system kind of once we've published our top 30 list and gotten a few ducks in order here as the season ends. And try to get some prospect folks on there to talk a little bit about that. But for now, let's move on to the next question. And again, there were kind of a whole bunch along this line, but it was basically how much regression should we expect, you know, based on how the team performed this year. And I think, you know, if you go player by player, there aren't that many good cases for major regression from these guys. You know, you look at Jonathan Scope, and he's basically a league average hitter. He's streaky. He hits for power. And that's pretty much what he did this year. You know, Jamer Candelario, we saw this breakout starting in 2020. And, you know, he had some rough months this year. So it's not like he's just gone nuts this year in a way that's completely unbelievable. You know, he struggled at times and he's worked on some specific things like closing the hole on the inner third and under his hands as a left-handed hitter. He's been a lot better in that regard this year. I think I covered that in the article I wrote about him a couple weeks ago, kind of considering a possible extension. I don't think there's major regression there. You know, Eric Haas, there's possibility for regression there. But again, he's another one who has learned to, you know, to deal with right-handers a little better by taking fastballs and just trying to line them the opposite way, which has helped him substantially, I would say. He's still not a guy that you really want to see facing tough right-handers all the time. You know, when he's behind in the count, anybody with a solid major league quality breaking ball can really work him over and victimize him. But you know, that's how it's been this year too. So I don't really think there's much reason to think it would change substantially next year. He hits the ball very hard, and that average exit velocity does help you collect more hits and supports a little bit higher BABIP as well in the process. So I'm not real worried about him either. Akil Baddoo, you know, could get better. I mean, you would think he would get better considering, you know, this was really only his second season as a professional player. And, you know, he did it in the major leagues coming basically straight from A-ball. And that's been remarkable in itself. And you see the discipline that he's shown through much of the season and the maturity that he's got. And you combine that with his speed and power, and, you know, there's a good chance he gets better next year. You can look at his BABIP, which I think is somewhere near 360, and assume there's going to be some regression there. And that's probably true. If he doesn't get better, he probably won't get as many hits next year. But there's a good chance he gets better. And there's a good chance he gets better defensively as well. That's another thing that, you know, we overlook with him, is that he hasn't really had those reps in the outfield. And now he's, you know, catching fly balls from major league hitters, spinning all over the place, in a whole host of new stadiums that he's unfamiliar with. You know, it's not so surprising that he could use more experience, you know, picking up the ball to improve his reads and his routes. You know, I think he could get better there. And when you look at the overall kind of luck factor, you know, the Tigers' run differential, I think, is only 60 runs, like better than it's supposed to be, or worse than their record, excuse me. And that's, you know, that's not a whole lot. You know, the Tigers haven't gotten that lucky, I don't really feel like. You know, they've certainly had their, you know, Harold Castro bounces a couple singles through, you know, to win a game here or there. But they've also had meltdowns. And they've also, you know, had some injury
bad luck. A lot of teams have. But, you know, to lose Teron, Urania, Boyd, and then Spencer Turnbull all, and then Jake Rodgers as well, you know, that's a fair amount of injury trouble in a given season. You know, we just have to be thankful that it wasn't any of the three young studs that we've got here. And knowing how pitching works, you know, their time is coming as well. You know, you've got to have that depth. And, you know, the Tigers have some pitching depth coming. With guys like Wentz and Reese Olson, you know, obviously they drafted Ty Madden along with Jackson Jobe. Jobe is, you know, further away, obviously, as a high school draftee. But there's some guys like that, and some of the guys I mentioned that you might see in the Rule 5, you know, Brisky, Brendan White, Garrett Hill, like maybe one of those guys takes a little step forward and you've got, you know, a depth starter there. You could say the same thing about Rony Garcia, who's another one who, you know, if he's healthy, you would probably expect to see in the Rule 5 to get some, or not in the Rule 5, in the Arizona Fall League to get more experience. But, you know, they weren't lucky. They didn't necessarily just luck into a bunch of wins or outperform the Pythag that substantially. You know, if anything, they were probably somewhat unlucky in April, and they also just took some beatings because it just wasn't a very good team then. You know, A.J. Hinch was still working through all the Avila Garden Hire holdovers that, you know, had been here, you know, not really getting a whole lot done. You know, Jacoby Jones obviously kind of being the prime example, but you know, they spent about a month clearing those guys out, you know, getting Willie Castro out of the shortstop position, for example, and cutting his playing time. You know, that first month had a lot of just sort of testing and experimentation going on, so I don't feel, you know, like the Tigers are bound to regress necessarily at all. I think a lot of what might feel like overperformance has been good coaching, and we have these coaches now, and the Tigers haven't really seen, you know, a great managing and great, you know, great coaching in a really long time. You know, Jim Leland was a solid manager. You know, he had some good pitching coaches along the way, but you know, I don't think we've seen anything quite this good since at least, you know, Sparky Anderson, Roger Craig. And, you know, that should continue to pay dividends in the years to come. We might not see the guys that they've already worked with get that much better, apart from the young guys who are still, you know, developing, Manning, Mize, Skubal, Badu, Hill, maybe. You know, if we really want to look at, you know, what players seemingly overperformed, I mean, you could look at, you know, Harold Castro's BABIP, and yeah, it's high, and, you know, he's had a couple hits, you know, of the seeing eye variety that were really key this season. You know, is Harold Castro going to regress? Yeah, I mean, probably to some degree, but he's also not that likely to play a whole ton next year. You know, I'm pretty convinced the Tigers will go get a shortstop, and once Torkelson is up, which shouldn't be too long, you're going to have Jonathan Schoop playing every day at second base. You know, Harold Castro is going to be your backup, and you're going to have guys like, you know, Zach Short and Willie Castro maybe, you know, still kind of lingering around as sort of your depth pieces. You know, there's a little bit of a luck factor there, but they should get better at the positions Harold Castro has played this year. You know, maybe the biggest example is, you know, guys like Willie Peralta and Drew Hutchison, you know, coming up and pitching effectively, you know, two guys whose careers, you know, were pretty much on the rocks. You know, that's fortunate, but that's, again, that's good coaching. That's, you know, why you hire Chris Vetter, to be able to get more out of those guys than, you know, anybody, you know, head in quite a long time. There's a lot that goes into that. You have to identify guys who are, you know, healthy and, you know, coachable and guys that you think you can work with. You know, Julio Teran might've worked out really well, but, you know, the health factor bit him, and that could happen, you know, to any pitcher, of course. I think what you're going to see going forward is that, you know, the teaching that we've seen from Fetter and Juan Nieves this year, you're going to see that start to filter down, you know, a lot more of their strategies and their philosophy and their coaching techniques, the way they use data, the way they improve guys' individual pitches. You know, I expect to see that approach, you know, spread throughout the minor leagues. And so, you know, this should be something that we see, you know, more of going forward. You know, if you watch the really good development teams like the Rays and the Dodgers and the Astros, you know, guys who don't look like much, you know, quite often, those are the teams that pluck those guys and improve them a little bit, and all of a sudden you've got a major league player again. You know, you can't expect them all to work out, but overall we should see, you know, a lot more consistency and the ability to maximize the guys that they've got. And, you know, not only just in their pitching specifically, but also in, you know, the way the Tigers defend behind them. You know, if you want to talk about luck, when you look at the Tigers' defensive grades this year, you know, the defense graded out pretty badly. And I, you know, I don't love defensive runs saved. I don't even look at UZR anymore. You know, outs above average from StatCast is at least objective, but also misses, you know, crucial details like how hard the hop was, you know, details of the play sometimes don't get factored in there. So, you know, we still don't have a perfect defensive metric, but, you know, the Tigers were good when they were shifting and when they pitched to the shift properly. But a lot of the time, you know, the defensive unit was overall pretty subpar. So, you know, that could be something that gets shorn up a little bit just by adding a shortstop who's, you know, a good defender. You know, and then hopefully you add in Riley Green, who's, you know, a pretty good corner outfielder. You know, maybe not real suited for right field. You know, his arm is solid, certainly not impressive. But he is, you know, faster than I think people gave him credit for when we drafted him, and, you know, has made a lot of really nice plays. Seems to read the ball really well. You know, generally makes the play and has, you know, pulled off some highlight reel catches. You know, was down in Toledo a couple times recently and saw Spencer Torkelson playing first base. And, you know, Spencer Torkelson's got pretty good hands. You know, he's not the most, you know, strongest, most accurate thrower, which is why third base never really seemed all that likely. But at first base, you know, he's potentially better than average there. So, you know, there are ways that defensively they could get better by improving the pitching and, you know, kind of when you're throwing the ball where you're supposed to and sequencing hitters the way Chris Fetter wants you to, you know, you're going to hit into double plays. You're going to get those double plays when you need them. And if the Tigers have a defense and a middle infield that can turn them a little bit more consistently next year, which they've been bad at this year, you know, they might look luckier next year than they did this year. So overall, I don't really expect, you know, that kind of a fall off necessarily. I think, you know, they've leveled up and they should be able to kind of sustain, you know, this kind of play. You know, this is why AJ Hinch has the reputation he does, is that his teams win close games. More than the other guy, AJ Hinch generally pulls the right lever, you know, as far as the bullpen and, you know, the strategy overall, you know, the pinch hitting, all those things. And then you combine that with, you know, Fetter and Nieves being very good pitching coaches. And, you know, you should expect to outperform sometimes. That's, you know, that's what the Rays and the Dodgers do. They get guys to overperform what other teams were able to get out of them. And hopefully, you know, that will continue.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So now we get to the, you know, the crux of the biscuit here, which is, you know, what should the Tigers do this offseason? How much should they spend? Is this the time to spend? And then, you know, specifically, what should they go and get? I definitely think this is the time to start going for it. The Tigers don't need to, you know, spend $70 or $80 million, and I assume they're not going to this offseason. But, you know, they could certainly add, you know, $50 million to the payroll and be right around league average. I think this is the time to do that, because if you sort of lay out the roster and when the Tigers' young talent is going to start, you know, reaching arbitration, you know, that's like 2023, 2024. So by that point, you're going to have to decide, you know, on those guys, whether or not you want to extend them or not, or what's, you know, what's your plan going to be for, you know, Casey Mize, Tarik Skubal, and then Matt Manning and Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson. You know, and that could be altered a little bit by the new collective bargaining agreement as well, based on how, you know, or if they alter the service time paradigm. We'll have to see. But, you know, that's how I look at it, is that you've got like this 3-year window-ish where those guys are all cheap. You should be betting on them to get better, because that's what you've, you know, you've basically pinned all of our hopes on,
not just their hopes, but the hopes of the entire fan base that these guys are going to be good impact players. There's no guarantee that any one of the five is going to be a big star, but they don't necessarily have to be. If you get five guys who are actually good and cost controlled, that can work for you. You know, the Tigers have Miguel Cabrera under contract for two more years after this season, and that's, you know, $32 million a year. If you sign someone now, you know, build that payroll up to, say, league average, you know, add $50 million or so this offseason, then, you know, that you're pretty much locking yourself in. You're going to say, okay, for the next 2 years, this is the team. You know, we're going to sign a shortstop and a starting pitcher and, you know, add some pitching depth, and hopefully a good left-handed reliever would be a good idea. Somebody else mentioned that in one of the questions, whether or not we should go get a left-handed reliever. I definitely think we should. That's a specific area where I think it would really help them. You know, it frees up Tyler Alexander. I haven't really seen enough of Ian Kroll to be convinced that things are really different for him. You know, Derek Holland has been effective at times, but I don't know that, you know, he's necessarily the guy that they're going to bring back either. It'd be nice to keep guys like that, you know, in the minor leagues and just overpay them, you know, sort of for the option to be able to have that depth stashed away. But I'm not sure how viable some of that's going to be. But, you know, A.J. Hinch has an opt-out. That's what we're told. He didn't come here to sit around for, you know, 2 or 3 years until Chris Illich decides whether or not he's even going to, you know, move the payroll up to league average. The Tigers are supposed to have a new deal with Bally Sports sometime in the next year or two, which should be far more lucrative than the one they've currently signed. So that should be, you know, more profit coming in, which would help. And then you also look at the fact that the Tigers were a revenue-sharing team this year because of their, you know, their woeful performance the past couple of years. This is sort of like the last fruit of the tank. You know, we're not going to be picking top 10 anymore. But if we sign a player who receives a qualifying offer this offseason, we don't have to give up our second-round pick next year. Because we're a revenue-sharing team, it would be the third-round pick. Now, and, you know, and so based on that, I would especially think, like, this is the year to go sign that big free agent. Like, if, you know, if you're ever going to do it, this makes, you know, perfect sense as the time to go ahead and go get one of those guys. Now, you could argue that the qualifying offer system may just go away in the next collective bargaining agreement. That is, you know, certainly possible, which would, you know, change the, you know, the situation a little bit. I mean, I would say you've got to do it anyway. But, you know, these factors kind of all point in the direction that, yeah, the Tigers need to go and do some things this year, this offseason. If they, you know, if they had done as I begged them to do and traded for Trevor Story this year, how much different would this team be? You know, would they have struggled so much in April, or would they have had that one extra bat and much better defense at the shortstop position? And how much would that have changed things early on? You know, Trevor Story is a 3-4 WAR player, but based on what the Tigers have had this year, you know, you might have an upgrade of as much as 5 wins overall. You know, this could be basically a 500 team, just based on that. And then if things had gone a little bit luckier, maybe as far as, you know, the pitching goes, you know, if Turnbull had stayed healthy and you still had him, you know, this season could look different. Tigers could be in the wild card hunt. They certainly should be next year, you know, at minimum. You cannot stay in this, like, weird mid-ground where you're not winning. You're not, not really a threat to, you know, to take down the White Sox. But you're also not, you know, you're not drafting at the top of the draft anymore. You're not getting the biggest bonus pool in the draft. All those factors. You don't want to be in that middle ground, you know, as much as possible without, you know, going out and signing Carlos Correa, Max Scherzer, you know, Carlos Rodon, two ace relievers, and trading for the best catcher, you know, you can get your hands on. I don't think they're going to go that crazy, and I don't really think they need to. I think you go get yourself a shortstop, you go get yourself a good starting pitcher, and a good left-handed reliever, and if you can make some small signings or trades to get a, you know, a strong defensive catcher, or, you know, to add some starting pitching depth of the order that Willie Peralta constituted, you know, prior to the season, then you do all those things, and then you just kind of let it ride for 2 years and see how it goes. You know, the Tigers have a lot of sort of mediocre to goodish prospects now. Those are the type of guys that you typically use as trade bait more so than expecting to develop them into good major league players, especially the Tigers with their track record.
you know, should probably end up using some of those guys to fill some holes over the next year or two. And if you do things that way, you know, the payroll never really has to get above, you know, $135 million, maybe $140 million, which is very reasonable. You know, Mike Ilitch was spending as much as $210, $220 million, and that was 5 years ago. So, you know, I think that's a pretty reasonable marker. And I think, you know, that Chris Ilitch is going to do that, because I think there's the pressure to keep AJ Hinch happy and, you know, making sure that this thing doesn't go off the rails, and him just decide, well, you know, there's no commitment here. You're not going to see that happen. And, you know, just all those other factors all kind of line up, the payroll and everything else. And if you go ahead and spend that money this year, you know, and just supplement with small trades and signings beyond getting a shortstop and a good starting pitcher this offseason and that left-handed reliever, you should be okay, and give yourself a shot. And if Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green turn out like, you know, that like they should, like we expect that they will, and if Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal and Matt Manning, you know, all develop into solid starting pitchers, and hopefully one of them into more than that, then there you go. Then, you know, you can contend at that point. You know, you might not be the Dodgers or the White Sox, but you can still win. And at that point, you know, 2 years on, Miguel Cabrera's money all comes off the books. The payroll, you know, drops $32 million. And you're back down to, you know, around $100 million, maybe a little bit over. And, you know, that's when you evaluate what you got in terms of all these, the young, talented players that you've got. And, you know, and then you can go ahead and sign another big free agent if you need to. You can shore things up with, you know, multiple solid pieces, all that sort of thing. But you'll have that payroll flexibility back then, even if the payroll never goes up to, you know, like what we would think of as a legit contending payroll for a mid-market team, you know, like $160, $170 million. Maybe they'll never get there. And that might be all right if they do the rest of it well. So that's why they should spend and why I think they will. Who should they get for shortstop? I'm still pretty on board with Trevor Story. I think Carlos Correa is going to make, you know, $350 million. And you're going to have to compete with the Yankees and the Houston Astros. And I think it's very likely that he just returns to the Houston Astros. He and his wife are about to have their first baby. You know, he loves the area. He's kind of the hometown hero there. And it wouldn't surprise me if they just decided they wanted to, you know, spend their career there. Houston Astros aren't really the team I think of for, you know, a big, super long-term deal. But they've got a lot of payroll coming off. You know, they've got $32 million that's owed Zach Greinke this year. They won't have to spend that next year. Their payroll looks, you know, pretty well in order, somewhere around $110 million, even with, you know, all the guys who are on fairly expensive deals, like Altuve and Bregman. You know, Michael Brantley's a short-term deal, but, you know, he's another kind of example there. You know, Gurriel, they've got all those guys, but they can still afford to sign Correa, and they probably need to. You know, they've got a decent shortstop prospect in the minors, or they could slide Alex Bregman to shortstop and do something else. But at the end of the day, I still think it's really likely that Correa either ends up there or the Yankees just go nuts and, you know, and spend the money, which they can do, to get themselves the shortstop that they really need, the superstar, you know, infielder that they've been lacking the past couple of years and is really, you know, kind of hurting them. You know, they're not a good defensive team, and they're not getting as much production as they need to out of the infield. So obviously they've got pitching problems as well, but he would make sense there. So, you know, Corey Seager has, you know, a lot of injury trouble in his background. So does Correa to some degree, with the back issues. The reason I like Story is that he's probably the best defender of the bunch and a good hitter and can steal you a bunch of bases. And the profile to me speaks more than the other two do of a player who should be, you know, valuable for a long time to come. I like to bet on guys who are speedy and athletic. I think those guys tend to hold up longer than most other types of players. You know, there's sort of a cliche that the speed guys lose, you know, are going to burn out. They're going to lose that speed if that's what they depend on too much. But from what I've seen, you know, the faster players tend to stay fast. It's the guys who are like a little bit faster than average who fill out, you know, get over-muscled and can't really run anymore, start to have more lower body injuries and all that sort of thing. You know, Rajay Davis, Jared Dyson, guys like that, you know, just kind of keep ticking. And, Trevor Story has that. And then on top of that, he's also a very good hitter. He's not an elite hitter. He's not Carlos Correa. He might not be quite as good as Seager is when Seager is healthy. I don't really have, you know, the Coors Field type concerns that some of you have. Most of the research I've seen from that, you know, illustrates that it just doesn't last. You know, like players will have weird splits where they're really good at home and bad away when they play for the Rockies. And then it all kind of just normalizes, you know, once they move elsewhere. And I assume that would be no different here. I also think you're looking at a player in Trevor Story who's coming from an organization that is not particularly savvy and maybe hasn't gotten the most out of him. Certainly, you know, mentally and emotionally, you know, being on a team that, you know, can't win and is stuck in this weird limbo and the front office is putting its foot in its mouth and, you know, that you've had Nolan Arenado, who is, you know, basically Trevor Story's mentor, you know, not happy at all after signing that longer term deal there, you know, with the direction of the organization at all. I'm sure some of that rubbed off on Story. He got off to a slow start this year and had, I think, a thumb injury. But, you know, he's picked it up and looks pretty more like himself. And he's a really good defender. And to me, that matters a lot. That matters a lot because I know Chris Fetter is really big on sequencing those ground balls and getting out of jams that way. You know, when his guys have to go to the stretch and there's a runner on first, that's the play every time, is that they're, you know, they're trying to get that ground ball. And he's very good at understanding hitters' swing holes and how to set them up to, you know, to pull that ground ball into the shortstop or to the second base hole and get the double play. And Trevor Story turns the double play really well. So that's another aspect you've got there. And then you've also got the speed aspect. I think we've all really enjoyed having, you know, a bunch of fast players who could steal some bases this year. You know, Robbie Grossman is fast. Nico Goodrum is relatively, well, Nico Goodrum's faster than Robbie Grossman, maybe not a better base stealer, but both of those guys can steal bags. And then you got Akil Baddoo and Derek Hill, who've, you know, kind of run wild at times, and that's been really fun to watch. You add Trevor Story into that mix, and you've got another guy that, you know, A.J. Hinch can use to, you know, to steal bases. You know, it is adept in the hit and run and also makes a good candidate to hit and run behind. Yeah, you know, I just think in a lot of ways he fits and he shouldn't be too terribly expensive. You know, you're probably looking at around $200 million, I would estimate. And that's fine. I know it sounds like a crazy amount of money and some of you are think like, oh, I don't want to, you know, a 10-year deal. We don't want to do those kind of things anymore. But everybody has to do those things. You're just going to have a really hard time winning unless you have the absolute monster, you know, development system that the Rays have, where they can just continually trade and flip good players. You know, they haven't drafted, you know, high in forever, and they just keep converting and developing their players and then converting them into more and more prospect talent, which is just, you know, remarkable to watch. But we're not, you know, I don't expect the Tigers to do as well as that. And in a lot of ways, we don't want to be that kind of team. We don't want to be the team that, you know, would trade like Casey Mize in a year or two from now, you know, because they want cost-controlled talent. We don't want to be that team necessarily. So we're trying to find that balance point. You know, we're not going to spend $200 million the way the Dodgers do. We're not going to draft and develop and deal the way the Rays do. You know, they've got to kind of find some of that middle ground, but you're going to have to pay for a player somewhere along the way. And shortstop makes all the sense in the world because the Tigers don't have a shortstop anywhere in the minor league system, that anyone who, you know, follows prospects and, you know, is going to tell you is likely to even make it to the major leagues as a regular everyday player, let alone be a good player. I like Ryan Kreidler. You know, it's been a good story this year. I'm willing to see what happens next year. He might prove a useful utility bat. He's continued to hit, you know, still has some struggles against right-handed pitching. And, you know, if things all go Ryan Kreidler's way next year and he's at Toledo most of the season just mashing, well, all right, well, then, you know, then you're in business. But, you know, maybe you've got a third baseman there. Maybe then you trade Candelario. I don't worry about blocking people. And I especially don't worry about it when it's a guy like Kreidler who, all things taken into account, probably his best outcome is, you know, a useful utility player who can play, you know, pretty much anywhere on the infield for you and be solid, or at least decent at shortstop. in particular, and you know, and can hit a bit and hit for some power. You know, that's fine. Maybe that part comes to pass, but the idea that we've got a, you know, 3-4 win shortstop coming, I think is fantasy. I think that's what you've got to do this offseason, and Trevor Story would be my guy. You know, I've seen people talking about Javi Baez because you might be able to get him cheap. You know, there's just a lot of danger in Javi Baez's profile as a hitter. As much as I love watching him play and would not complain if the Tigers, you know, signed him for, you know, a reasonable sum and not a huge long-term deal, I don't think that's really the play. You know, Corey Seager might be cheaper, or maybe the Dodgers are just like, nope, we're gonna just keep you here with Trey Turner. You guys are going to be our middle infield next year. You know, we'll see how that plays out. He might be available. You know, and there might be someone you could trade for, but you know, Willy Adames really made the most sense as far as, like, if you were going to go out and trade for a guy, Willy Adames seemed like the right guy. You know, the Tigers are familiar with him. We, you know, raised him from a pup, and dealt him to the Rays, and to bring him back, you know, seemingly made a lot of sense. And the cost wasn't too prohibitive. But they, you know, they passed on that. And I don't know if there's, you know, I could throw out a few ideas, but this is already going on too long. There really isn't a really viable trade option out there that I see. So just get me Trevor Story. If you want to get Carlos Correa, fine. I'm not worried about this one big expenditure. I think it's absolutely necessary. And then obviously with Spencer Turnbull out all through next year and Matt Boyd, you know, due probably $9 million in arbitration next year and hasn't been able to get his elbow right, and now you're in the off season where you're not really going to be able to evaluate, you know, how healthy he is. They haven't quite been able to figure out what's wrong yet. So I don't really know that they're going to be able to figure out what's wrong until he's on a mound and throwing again. I don't really like the idea of, you know, spending $9 million on 1 year Matt Boyd. But, you know, that's going to be their call, and we don't have access to the medicals, so they'll have to decide based on that. But assuming that Matt Boyd is unlikely to be, you know, tendered a contract, then, yeah, you know, maybe you can bring back Willy Peralta. You know, maybe you find a starting pitcher, you know, who was where Willy Peralta was, you know, last offseason, struggling to find a job, a guy that, you know, Chris Federer or Juan Nieves thinks they can tune up. You know, you pick up another one or two guys like that, and that might work. But if you just want to get, you know, a fairly good starting pitcher, you know, I also would like John Gray from the Rockies, because I think he's someone who is overperformed or underperformed what he's capable of, and, you know, is coming from an organization that I don't really have a whole lot of regard for as far as their ability to develop pitchers. I think there might be some more meat on the bone there with Gray. And, you know, he's been overall, you know, a pretty durable, hard-throwing right-hander who has a good breaking ball. And Chris Federer might be able to do a few things with. As far as, you know, the catcher position, you know, I mean, right now I don't know that you're going to do that much better than Eric Haas and Dustin Garneau. I think they'll probably add another catcher. I don't really think they're going to bring Grayson Griner back, unless, you know, he's sort of DFA'd and re-signs on a minor league deal as depth, which is a possibility. But there also isn't really a guy in free agency as a catcher that I'm terribly interested in. Two suggestions as far as, like, maybe trading for a guy is, you know, Danny Jansen, who is a pretty good defensive catcher for the Blue Jays, who just sort of hasn't been able to figure it out at the plate in his first season and a half. In the major leagues, he's a guy that you might be able to trade for, you know, without it being prohibitively expensive, and could be a guy that the Tigers feel like they can work with and acquire without having to, you know, pay through their nose. The other one that's pretty interesting is Jacob Stallings from the Pittsburgh Pirates, because he's an exceptional framer, really good defensive catcher overall, pretty solid hitter. And, you know, is starting to get to the point where he's going to be arbitration eligible, even though he's already, I believe, 30, is only just getting to that point where, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates don't generally keep, you know, guys around through their arb years, especially the second and third year. You know, Jacob Stallings is coming off a career year. He seems like a guy that they would be willing to trade right about now. Like, this is the time to cash in on him. And I don't know. I'm sort of torn about it because I'd love to have him. I think he would do great with the Tigers, and I think, you know, having him with the pitching staff and working with AJ and Fetter and Nieves would be a nice unifying force to, you know, make the pitching better, make the way the defense runs with the pitching and coordinates with the pitching even better. It's just a question of whether or not you want to take on a guy for, you know, and make that kind of a trade for 3 years. When you've got Dylan Dingler coming, you've got Jake Rogers, who might be back late next year, presumably in 2023, he'll be back for good. So, I mean, you kind of have to factor that in. I'm not sure that that's the place to really spend your trade currency. And it depends on what they would want. You know, can I give them Isak Paredes and, you know, Bo Brisky? Probably not. Probably going to take more than that. You know, maybe Joey Wentz and Isak Paredes. Maybe something like that would be enough. And I would probably be willing to do that if the Tigers were in a position to get a catcher long term. It's the fact that we kind of just need a guy for a year that makes me think someone like Stallings might be a little bit too rich for their blood as far as what they'd have to give up and trade to get him. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, Dustin Garneau's performed, you know, reasonably well, I think. Well, he's performed great based on, you know, what you'd expect. But, you know, is he really going to be good next year? I don't really know. Eric Haas is a pretty good option, but not an above average defensive catcher. You know, maybe just average. You know, finding someone like that to fill in that position, I think would be a good idea. It's just not really a place where it's crucial and you'd want to invest a lot of money. You know, to me, it's still shortstop first. Obviously, you're going to need a starting pitcher and some starting pitching depth, at least a little bit, depending on how you feel about those upper level starting pitching prospects. And then, yeah, I'd like a left-handed reliever again. You know, I'd like them to find someone, you know, pretty good along those lines if they could. Or maybe even better would be to find an okay left-handed starter that they think would be a good conversion prospect, which would give you a guy with the ability to stretch out here and there, much like Tyler Alexander has, but perhaps someone who's a little bit more of like a power guy to complement some of the other arms in the bullpen. Those are the things that I'm really, really looking for. Someone also asked about the outfield next year and how I think that sets up. And that's probably the final question I'll get to here as we're nearing the hour mark. You know, it's going to be Robbie Grossman. It's going to be, I think, Akil Baddoo in center field with Derek Hill kind of as his understudy. You know, playing part-time, pinch hitting, pinch running, coming in as a defensive replacement and, you know, getting his starts here and there. And then, you know, the other corner outfield spot is, you know, Riley Green's. And it's just a question of how long the Tigers end up having to wait before they bring Riley Green up. You know, for my money, he's pretty much ready. Like, you could pretty much just bring him up straight out of camp. But we'll have to see, you know, how the service time thing plays out in the CBA. And, you know, and how he looks next spring. Like, I'm quite convinced he's going to have the opportunity to win the job. It's just a question of whether or not they're, you know, sort of already counting on that, or whether or not they're keeping a bit of an open mind as far as that goes. And if he's not quite ready, you're probably just going to use Victor Reyes. Like, I don't really see the Tigers going out and signing another, you know, position player. Like, you know, we've talked about someone like Mark Canha, someone who could play some corner outfield, but is also a first baseman, to, you know, kind of bridge those two positions until Riley and Spencer get here. But I don't really think the Tigers are going to invest anything in that. I think they're going to expect that Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson are going to be pretty close to ready, and that if they need to hold them down in the minor leagues for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, they can probably make that work, especially if they've, you know, bolstered the offense and defense with a shortstop. So I think you're probably looking at that as the outfield. And obviously, you know, that leaves Daz Cameron sort of in that, you know, that no man's land, where he hasn't really gotten much chance to show his stuff because of injury, because he wasn't really going all that well earlier in the year. But, you know, the Tigers can still hang on to him for another year. And having him as your first outfielder up from Toledo is pretty good. And that gives him another year to, you know, hopefully stay healthy and get consistent work in and develop a little bit further with the coaching staff that, you know, is going to be probably somewhat overhauled. We'll see what they do at Toledo, but, you know, there's going to be some new coaches in the system. I would imagine that Daz Cameron might be a bit of a focus for Ryan Garko as a project, as a guy who, you know, is getting a bit old as a prospect, and you need to, you know, find a way to tune up and get the most out of him possible. The same might be said for Paredes and Willie Castro, assuming all three of those guys, you know, make it through the offseason with us and don't end up in a deal somewhere. So I think for now I'm going to leave it there. Got some ideas for some good shows coming up this offseason. We'll probably do a little bit of postseason talk as the playoffs get underway with Ashley. There's a couple people I'd like to talk to, John Pessa and RJ Anderson, a little bit about the CBA negotiations as that starts to unfold. Things have been oddly quiet on that front over the last month or two, I would say, which, you know, I'm taking as a good sign. There isn't a PR war going on social media between, you know, MLB and the Players Association as of late, which, you know, at least that is a good sign. Hopefully they're making some progress in the preliminary talks there. But yeah, we've got some guests there to talk about, and you know, I'm hopeful to get a few people in to talk about the farm system and about player development. We're going to scour around and see if we can find someone who knows more about Ryan Garko than most of us do sometime this offseason and have that conversation. And we'll probably team up with the guys over at Motor City Bengals a little bit, Roger and Chris. We usually do a few cross pods between, we're all friends. So, you know, you can probably look forward to a few episodes like that as well. But for now, you know, we're just gonna lock in here, watch the Tigers over the last nine games, and hope they can run down Cleveland. Be pretty nice to finish in second place. I think there's a bit of an impetus been put by AJ Hinch to his players that, you know, we want to convince, you know, ownership and the front office that it's go time. And I don't really think anything, you know, fundamentally is going to change in the last nine games. But it would be nice to finish in second place and you know, kind of have that, you know, that little feather in your cap to turn to ownership and say, like, okay, you know, we need to level up to the top spot. We're close. You know, it doesn't hurt. So hopefully things will go well. And, you know, I'm looking forward to a really fun postseason as well. There's a lot of interesting storylines shaping up. Some of the teams that aren't making it are even more interesting. The San Diego Padres has been a fascinating story of late. And the Mets are always busy Metsing. So that's been entertaining, but I'm looking forward to postseason baseball and autumn getting here and you know, seeing how things start to unfold for the Tigers this offseason. I don't expect any big moves right out of the gate. We may have to wait a little bit based on the CBA, even more maybe than we have the past couple years, but there's definitely going to be plenty to talk about. So we'll be getting back at you guys soon. Thanks for all of your questions. Thanks for tuning in and listening and reading the site. You guys make all my baseball fandom much more enjoyable and entertaining to have this community to talk to about stuff every day. So thank you all very much, and we'll get back to you soon. Goodbye.